You're listening to Sound Poetry. I am your host, David Gilmore. This is Sound Poetry. I'm your host, David Gilmore, on Radio Tacoma, 101.9 FM. We have the pleasure today to meet with Yuan Changming, also known as Michael, who has published many, many collections of poetry. And welcome to Sound Poetry, Michael. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Yuan Changming is a 12-time Pushcart nominee, perhaps indicated by the number of publications, the world's most widely published poetry author from China in the English language world today. Grown up in an isolated village, Yuan started to learn the English language in Shanghai at age 19, quite late to learn English, and published several monographs on translation before leaving China. With a Canadian PhD in English from Saskatchewan on a study of John Keats, Yuan currently lives in Vancouver, and he edits an online Poetry Pacific with Alan Qing Yuan. Since mid-2005, Yuan has had poetry appear in more than 1,900, nearly 2,000 literary outlets across 48 countries, including Best Canadian Poetry in several years, the Best of the Best Canadian Poetry 10th Anniversary Edition, as well as Best New Poems Online. Recently, Yuan has served as on poetry juries and was nominated for Canada's National Magazine Awards. Well, with a bio like that, I am not going to list the names of your collections and the many journals that you have published in, because it would take us too long. You're doing amazing work. Yeah. Do you go to poetry readings too?
A dozen of times. Invited by universities, colleges, or coffee clubs.
Why don't we begin with a poem that you sent me where an insect is focused on, the South China cicada.
Yeah. So, cicada is a solid symbol of my childhood in a remote Chinese village. This poem is actually my very first poem I published in English. South China Cicada. No human ear has ever heard of you, cloistering yourself deep in the soil, silently sucking all sounds from roots for more than 13 years in a row, until high up on a summer painted tree, you slow off your earthly cell, pouring all your being in a single sound before the sun sets for the yellow leaf. Yes.
You really played with the sound of things, which, of course, in the single song of a cicada, mm-hmm. you've got also the music of the cicada's sound, right? So let's go on now to one from your new publication, E. Denning, which is a book of love poems primarily, that was published by Goldfish Press in 2022. You might want to tell us a little about your love life and whether this is purely metaphorical, made up from the heart, or whether it deals in the real life of the poet.
Second half of last year, I published four poetry collections. This one, Evening, is the second one. The whole book is love poetry, because for the past 13 years or so, I've been trying to challenge myself to write some love poetry. I just couldn't write it, probably because I have never experienced any real love inspiring enough for me to write love poetry. I know that I could write all kinds of poetry, every subgenre of poetry I could write, except love poetry. At a retired age, might be too old to write something like that. But luckily, in 2019, I happened to find my first crush after we lost each other for more than 40 years. He was such a big inspiration for me that I wrote more than 80 blog poems for her alone in the year of 2021. I collect all the poems I've written in my past writing career. So I gathered them together and make it into a whole collection. So about 80 of them devoted to her, and another 20 to my wife and my first date. So from this collection, I chose three love poems. The first two are devoted to her, and the other one is devoted to my first date. And this one is among the best accepted love poems I've ever written. Missing in missed moments. Each time I miss you, a bud begins to bloom. So you are surrounded by flowers everywhere you go. Each time I miss you, a dot of light pops up. So you are illuminated by the whole sky of stars through the night. Again, together, this is also devoted to my first crush, whose name is Chi Hong. Again, together, separated by the Pacific for almost half a century, and for God knows how much longer by the pandemic. We have no way to join each other in body as in soul. But today, you say you would rather I become your eyes if you had a choice at all, and if ever I could shrink into a tangible part of you, so you can see what I see much farther beyond the horizon, while we can live within the same solid human shape, breathing, eating, sleeping, dreaming, and feeling together. Even death shall no longer part us, as our mixed ashes are to return to the soil of Ma Yuhe. Well, I fell in love with you among young pine trees, where you will be able to watch the rainbow hang above our spirits, rising like glows after all storms are gone.
Yes, that's very descriptive then of the relationship, the timing, even the origin. The name of your village is there, right? I think you are very wise to write 20 love poems to your wife too.
I wrote 500 to her.
Oh well, you've overdone it. Then you've done very well in that regard too.
Just as a karma led us to meet again on a special occasion. Otherwise, we would never know each other forever again. And because of her, I wrote many short stories as well.
Writing not about someone, but to someone in this regard from your native home, did this give you a feeling of having a sense of a connectedness with the land that you came from?
Yes. I've been trying to find out the answer to the question why I have been so infatuated with her or so longing for her. I wrote an experimental short story about this in terms of seven different complexes, and one of them is what we call the hometown complex among Chinese. This is a very ancient and a traditional complex to all men. We'll always feel homesick, or there was a special sense of hometown complex for the Chinese. So this is something I want to explore in literature. And also so-called the first crush complex among Chinese people. And this is a very interesting psychological phenomenon. And in the Western society, in French, there's a special term for it. It's a medical term. But for Western people, it is morbid. It is not a healthy complex. But among Chinese, this is normal. And I find this a very profoundly interesting phenomenon to study, even in terms of psychology or medical studies. So that's why I try to work out all these things in literature.
The far other side of this world. Read this one to follow up in the love vein.
Sure. To Zhou Yeqing, a far, far from the other side of this world, I returned to my native place for the first time. The rivulet through the village has dried up. Childhood playmates are rarely seen, except flocks singing aloud as before. I heard that you were married to an unknown stranger. I don't know who he was, nor am I aware if ever you had one or two children. Also, I heard you died a few years ago. There must have been many cries over your loss, but none of them had anything to do with me. Definitely not, for I had already died before you. That was almost two generations ago. On a sleepless autumn night, I quietly buried my heart in your backyard, right under the banyan tree. Though it is no longer there, our muted laughter left a deep impression on the field, as if still echoing against the stem.
Yes. So the depth of your love is expressed there with burying your heart. And the tree that is no longer there. Interesting that you have the absent tree and the absent person who is the object of your early love. Yeah. Are you going to continue writing such poems, or do you feel that you exhausted yourself with the one collection?
Well, after that collection was published by Goldfish Press in Seattle, I actually have written at least 20 or 25 more love poems. Now my attention is focused upon fiction now. So I don't have much time and effort to do more poetry writing at the moment.
We're going to go on in your poetry to something a little different, something which begins to work on the way you use a word or play with a word, the one called awaiting.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Actually, this is more for me a philosophical or self-reflective one.
Okay.
And it was one of the best accepted poems, and it was included in the best of the best Canadian poetry, Awaiting. There was a long wait of the passengers for the detouring and delayed bus, and the wait of the wintry grasses, the wait of a legendary Lion King, before it preys upon a real baby zebra, and the weight of the summer sun deep in the nightmare, the weight of the orchid on the window ledge, the weight of the diamond in the unknown mine, and the weight where you stop and watch. And there is a weight of this darkness which you are going to compress into words, a weight that is to spread out thin on a blank paper, like winter stars holding the light in light years, the weight of your finished writing and longer weight than.
The inspiration of a poem like this is found in the word. I mean, you must contemplate this notion of time and waiting, and then consider things that are in a sort of dormant or waiting stage. Do you think in Chinese and translate sometimes from Chinese thought into the English, or are you able to do this sort of thing without contemplation of the Chinese idiom or Chinese phrase?
Okay.
How do you do that?
Actually, among the 20 poems I have prepared to read today, the only one was originally written in Chinese. That is the one I just read just now, To Zhou Ye Qing. All the others actually are originally written in English. And while I conceived the poems, I actually conceived in the language of English rather than Chinese. For me, English is a much more expressive language of poetic ideas or feelings. So it is interesting that whenever I begin to think or conceive anything, or anything literary, I would switch to English thinking rather than Chinese. I never really feel comfortable with writing Chinese.
And do you find that there's then a fluidity in your composition when you put them into verses? Do you have, do you spend a lot of time leaving them to lie in wait and then go back to them? Or do you find that you can produce these in an inspirational push?
It depends. On some occasions, the English phrases or language just come out from my mind. But sometimes I have to give a lot of time for something to sink in the bottom of my mind before I could come up with something. So for instance, one day, a few years ago, I wrote as many as 33 poems on a single day. But sometimes for 3 months in a run, I couldn't write a single line. It all depends upon whether I can get my inspirations. So that's why I believe in inspirations all the time.
That's interesting. Yes, there are dry periods and then very, very fruitful times where the mind just begins to push them out without even a lot of contemplation, maybe, and not even concern about reflecting on the line as you put it out. You're going to play with another word on Chinese chimes.
Yeah, this poem is quite an ambitious one because I used the form to imitate the way how a river flows. And also, the Yellow River, as the mother of Chinese civilization, has 9 detours, major detours. So I used 9 as many stanzas to talk about Chinese culture and the traditions. You are unaware of your obscure sources, but you are explicitly sure of the vast sea as your final destination. You always frown with your brownish wrinkles, but you prefer a non-professional smile on your face, your only luggage of life. All your teeth have been lost or pulled out, but you keep licking the muddy banks with your heart, despite your dreams' falls. Your song is no more than the form of silence, but you struggle hard to remain afloat on the sea of noises beyond the borderline of heaven. Your love for the lowest plateau often overturns and overflows, but you have never flooded the valley of the dragon's mind since your Confucius times. Your coarse head is crowded with holes and crevices, but you will deliver your promises to every unevenness instead of promising deliveries only. You occupy an enormously tiny place of the world, but you feed all the hopes and wishes of those with thirsty mouths stranded ashore. You flow down from the sky created by yourself, but you hope to avoid falling on the broken floor of your own church. You may be tortured or burned to steam, but you will eventually find your impossible way to the sea of the blue sky.
Right. Well, this is as a description of Yellow River, the Yellow River, which is it still a prolific river or is it drying, as you imply in parts?
Still quite prolific.
The detours, are these the tributaries of the river? They lead into the Yellow River from various sources.
Yes. A lot of tributaries. Yes. Mm-hmm.
And there is that one word in there, your love for the Luss plateau. Many people would not know the word L-O-E-S-S, a geological term for type of soil or rock form, right? That is related to the river. But you have never flooded the valley of the dragon's mind since Confucius times. Something of that geographically perhaps goes over our heads as we read. What is it you have in mind there, the dragon's mind, valley of the dragon's mind?
You see from the satellite or from on the moon, the Yellow River looks like the in the shape of a dragon. The shape of a dragon, of a real dragon.
All right.
Miss Wenting,
okay. It's a geographical term?
Yes, yes.
Yes.
It's a violent river, actually, very violent. And it has caused the civilization of Chinese civilization suffer a great deal over in history from time to time. Because it flooded everywhere. Often it flooded the whole valley. Sometimes. So that's why I said, no matter how violent or how destructive it is, but still, somehow it keeps the Chinese civilization alive, still alive. So that's what I'm trying to say.
So the Valley of the Dragon is actually the term, a geographical term.
Yeah, it's a geographical term, yes.
Yeah, right. You say that it flooded the Valley of the Dragon's mind since Confucius's times. Why did you bring Confucius in there? Just in what way does that give us a time element?
Well, since Confucius times, the Chinese civilization is, on the whole, I can say the word controlled or dominated, I should say, by Confucianism.
Okay.
Or by newer and newer and even newer form of Confucianism. So since Confucius times, the Chinese civilization was dominated by that specific doctrine. So combined with the Yellow River, these two are the most symbolic of Chinese civilization. So that's why I put them together.
All right. Okay. All right. The connection is with things that are essentially Chinese in geography as well as in history. So you're combining... finding both of those in that verse, in that way. Yes, I understand that now. So another one. Now, this one, I think, is metaphorical in a quite high degree, the making light of darkness.
To me, I think the world or life is often full of darkness, in a sense. But we can always try to make light of darkness by dealing together with light. So that's what I'm trying to move into the fabric of this poem, making light of darkness. In a world always half in darkness, your body may be soaked deep in a nightmare, rotting, but your heart can roam like a synchronous satellite in the outer space, leaving the long night far behind. As long as your heart flies fast and high enough, you will live in light forever. I play with the scientific fact that half of the world is night, the other half is daytime, and then all depends upon which part you are located and how you stand in relation to the universe. So in other words, as long as your heart lives together with the light, then you are deep in a world full of light.
You play now with a letter of the alphabet.
Yeah.
This one is very childlike in its the way that you play with the language, which I think is one of your joys from time to time, in the way that you love to make words work.
Yeah.
In this fashion. Yeah.
And actually I published a collection called The Origin of Letters. As an echo of Darwin's Origins of and Species. So I wrote I devoted a poem to each letter. So I have written 26 letter poems.
Okay.
It was actually published as a collection by a Chicago-based press. So this is one of them. This is one of my best received one of the letter poems.
All right.
Originally published in a Threepenny Review. The title symbol, as you pointed out, is just a Y. You love Y, not because it is the first letter in your family name, but because it is like a horn, which the water buffalo in your native village uses to fight against injustice, or because it's like a twig where a crow can come down to perch. A cicada can sing towards the setting sun as loud as it wants to. More important, it's like a real reed deeply rooted at the bank of the Nile, something you can bend into a whistle or hit a drum with. In pronouncing it, you can get all the answers you need. Besides, you can make it into a heartfelt catapult and shoot at a snake head or sparrow, as long as it lands within the range of your boyhood.
You bring up the naughty boy and the catapult at the end. A kind of reduction of the high-sounding use of Y into the catapult, which does damage. And now another play, this one, Yellow Comedy. I've read this over many times. Of course, you have the Yellow River in there. After all, why not bring the Yellow River in if you're going to find yellow words, right? Mm-hmm, and yeah. This one, too, I think you felt that you were playing with, but there's one asterisked word, Yerkish. What is Yerkish?
It's a language, it's a man-made or artificial language created for the use of AI, artificial intelligence.
So let's hear about Yellow Comedy.
Okay. This poem is inspired by a famous poem titled The White Comedy. By a poet, I forgot his name. I just know the name is very interesting. So I wrote this as an emulation of that poem.
Mm-hmm.
Yellow comedy. Using my yellow tail, I yellow swam from the yellow river as a yeast of the yellow peril against the yellow alert in yellow journalism. With a yellow hammer and a yellow sheet, I yielded to the yellow metal as a yellow spot, a quarter million yards away from yellow life. People call me Yellow Jack. Some hailed me as a yellow dog when I yelped on my yellow legs to flee from the yellow flu. Speaking yuckish like a yellow warbler, I have composed many yellow pages for the Yesty Yellow Book. To be published by the Yellow Press, don't panic. I yell low.
All right. So you make a joke. Now, immigration is much more contemplation of language, of course, and you're learning of another tongue.
This poem is as much about language as about immigration itself, especially yes. For me as a new immigrant. And so this is a very true reflection upon my own lingual cultural experience. To escape from the tyrannical logic of your mother tongue, you wandering through Earth's length and breadth, subjecting your old self to another syntax, a whole set of grammatical rules, strangely new to your lips and tips, to expand the map of your mind, far beyond your home and haven. In the meantime, it become colonized by all the puzzling paradoxes of this chosen language. For example, quicksand can be very slow. Boxing rings are in fact square. And the guinea pig is neither a pig nor is it from Guinea, like you or me.
Okay. You learned English, as you say in your bio, at a quite late age. Was that a struggle for you?
I really struggle and a lot of stories to tell. I was one of the last so-called worker, peasant, and a soldier student during the Cultural Revolution, the notorious political movement, well, from 1966 to 1976. I was forced to work in the countryside as a laborer because of the National Party at that time. So when I was admitted to Shanghai University, and just in case to avoid being sent back because I couldn't speak any language, when I was 19 years old, I tried to learn some English. And the only phrase I could sing at that time was, "Long live Chairman Mao." But by the time I went to Shanghai to attend university, Chairman Mao died already. when I began my study in English, I couldn't see anything. I couldn't even recognize 26 letters. My teachers and my classmates often make fun of me because of my British accent. And it takes me 3 months just to tell the difference between the letter N and the letter L in pronunciation. Because in my hometown dialect, we make no such distinction in sound.
People who leave a country often will not leave certain elements ever. They're embedded in your heart, in your mind, in such a way that you can't forget.
Yeah.
The metamorphosis points, I think, would be a good one to read in that regard. Yeah.
I would paint my skin into a colorless color, and I would dye my hair well to blue contacts, and I would even go for plastic surgery. But if I really do, I assure you, I will not remove my native village accent while speaking this foreign tongue. I began to imitate like a frog at age 19. Nor will I completely internalize the English syntax and Aristotelian logic. No, I assure you that I will not give up watching movies or TV series, reading books, listening to songs, each in Chinese, though I hate them for being too low and vulgar. I was born to eat dumplings, tofu, and thus fated to always prefer to speak Mandarin, though I write in English. I assure you that even if I am newly baptized in the canons of science, democracy, and human rights, I will keep in line with my father's half-blood group, just as my sons do. No matter how we identify ourselves or are identified by others, this is what I show you. I will never convert my proto-selfhood into white dataism. No. Not in the yellowish muscle of my heart.
All right. Let us conclude. The Skyline and Corn poems, which you have sent, these two, I think, in their brevity, go back to a sort of Asian feel. Yeah, why don't you read those two, Skyline and Corn?
Skyline, golden teeth glistening in the mouth of the city, silver clouds colliding at the town tip of the day. Bite off all the darkness, he whispered, and chew the light well.
That's that optimistic turn again. And then corn, we get back to teeth, just as you had the teeth glistening in the mouth of the city.
Okay. Corn. A whole body of teeth, nothing but teeth. To chew the passing summer, we bite off from you all the pearl-like memories tinged with the sunlight. A heart for the juicy kiss.
I have to thank you so much, Michael Yuan Chang Ming. You've been regaled by the variety of playful and sincere deep love poems of Michael from Vancouver, BC, known as Yuan Chang Min in his publications. And I can't thank you enough for joining us, Michael.
Thank you. Thank you. I love poetry and I love English. Thank you.
You've been listening to Sound Poetry. I've been your host, David Gilmore, with Yuan Chang Min from Vancouver, BC.